It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mego and Shime on WEEI.
It's Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Final hour of the program, taking you right up until 3 o'clock ahead of the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. 4:30 is the first kickoff for that one. That would be Chiefs and Texans. Mego, you earlier in the program had mentioned that Monday night is in fact National Championship night. One of the coaches in the National Championship game is Marcus Freeman, head coach of Notre Dame. There's been some reports that the Bears are interested in interviewing him for a head coaching job. Do you think he is kind of a dark horse candidate to land an NFL job here following the national championship?
Bears media. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think they should definitely entertain the idea of Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman is a great coach.
He's awesome.
If you watched his clock management, is in-game management at the end of that last game, like just a masterclass. And maybe it was just kind of whiplash compared to watching the Patriots' lack of in-game management. But he's so organized. He's such a program starter. I remember when Brian Kelly left for LSU, and full disclosure, I'm from a Notre Dame family.
Ooh, okay.
My older sister went there. My family is from the Midwest, so they just grew up big Notre Dame fans. And then once my sister went there, it was like, boom, everybody's married to Notre Dame now. My brother-in-law went to Notre Dame. Something else I want to ask you about that in a moment. But I just think that Marcus Freeman, like immediately when Brian Kelly left for LSU and did his whole my family, like fake accent thing down there. It was
Brian
so
Kelly is such a loser.
So embarrassing for him. This program got such a shot in the arm, and those guys absolutely adore and respect him. And I can't think of a time when Marcus Freeman ever struck a wrong note. And that's so rare. He's such a leader. We talk about leader of men, and that's something that gets thrown around a lot with the idea of these CEO head coaches. You know, what value does this person actually bring into an organization?
Yeah.
And I think he just seems like such a rare find. And Chicago's right there. I mean, I think it's like max 90 minutes from South Bend.
Correct.
So it makes sense to at least, you know, entertain the idea, meet with the guy,
hear what he's
about.
Costs.
Yeah, well, also just like, hey, have a lunch, spend an afternoon hearing how interested he is in the NFL or if he's going to be one of these college program guys and what he would do for the Bears, what he would do for Caleb Williams. Like, I love that guy. I can't say enough about him.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's an exceptional program builder and coach. I don't know how well it would translate to the NFL. I'd be curious to see. But if you're an NFL team, you should absolutely inquire. Freeman to me seems, and this just may be me making assumptions, but he seems like kind of a college lifer guy where he just, he loves helping younger men kind of achieve things greater than themselves and kind of really like build, like I said, like building a program. That's the kind of guy he feels like. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know him well enough. But that's what it feels like. He feels like a guy that could be the next head coach or be the head coach of Notre Dame for the next, 25 years.
Yeah. I wonder about the Bears. I think the right kind of franchise could scoop him up.
Yeah.
Like could entice him. I think about Brad Stevens coming from Butler to the Celtics.
Sure.
And the Celtics have a bit of like a collegial atmosphere to them, mm-hmm. even though they're one of the biggest, greatest franchises in the history of pro sports. Brad Stevens made sense. Like it translated easily and he had a lot of success early on and then kicks upstairs. I could see, I don't know exactly which program it would be. And the NFL is, I think, a bigger jump from college ball than college ball in basketball to the NBA.
Yeah.
But I could see it working out. I don't know if it would happen this season. I feel like he probably thinks that he's kind of just getting started.
Yeah, he's
at
only
Notre Dame.
39. Like
he's only been there a couple seasons, and now they're in the national championship. And it's not like they've had some like hotshot quarterback that they've been tied to. In fact, I don't think this national championship game is going to go well for Notre Dame.
Probably not.
I'm sorry to say,
but
I think it's going to be pretty lopsided. But, I'm just happy for that guy that he's there.
Yeah, I think he's an exceptional coach. He seems like a really good guy. And I wish him nothing but success with Notre Dame. I just don't know. Again, I'm not sure how well that translates to the NFL. Because I don't think, and again, I don't know him well enough. I don't follow Notre Dame football close enough to know. But it doesn't seem like he's one of these football savant guys. It's more that he is just a really good leader of men and a really good kind of role model and just like again
you're like you're wondering if he like studies the game he's nerd enough.
Like I think Sean McVay is a pretty good leader of men, but he's such a nerd when it comes to the actual football stuff that guys follow suit because they're like, dude, this guy doesn't even play and he knows so much more than I do. Whereas Marcus Freeman I think is a guy that other guys would go to war for, and I don't know if that would like in ways that translate to the NFL, but you would have to have really good coordinators under you to have a lot of success. Otherwise, you're just kind of Mike Tomlin, where you don't win a lot of playoff games, but you have pretty good seasons every year.
Okay, so I'm going to make this like totally about myself.
Okay, go for it.
As we were talking about the Commanders, I was so uninspired when they hired Dan Quinn last season because
sure.
I thought that they were last offseason. I thought they were going to get your guy Ben Johnson. I was like, let's freaking go.
And then Ben Johnson told them to turn around on the private jet.
Yeah, pretty much. he almost pulled a McDaniels. He got like he didn't go the full McDaniels, but he went like a quarter McDaniels on the Commanders. They end up with Dan Quinn, and at the time I was like, come on, this retread. This is so boring. You know all the stuff that we always say about these coaches that are at other programs and that we don't know super well, but we're just sick of them. And then comes in and amazing culture guy. And I guess it's my way of thinking, like, have we just got too far on being enamored with the nerds? As younger fans compared to some other people watching and pontificating on the games, are we too enamored with the football nerds? Like, we need our guys to be crushing tape. Mm. We need our guys to be sprouting off these trees of other nerds. Like, the nerds beget nerds. And if you don't have a nerd as a coach, you're kind of missing the point of where the game is going.
So, as a nerd, I self-identify as one. I would like, I root for my guys and I want nerds to be popular in football.
You just want to be a coach. So you want to nerd your way
into the coaching job. I want there to be opportunities for guys that didn't necessarily play the sport at such a high level, but love the sport beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I think McVay kind of falls right into that cat. Like he's such a nerd.
So where does Dan Campbell land on the nerd to former player hardo spectrum?
So I think Dan Campbell's like a pretty smart football guy, at least defensively.
I'm not saying if you're not analytical nerdy that you're not smart, but there's a difference, right, between two approaches.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think you can work in both ways. That's the beauty of the NFL is I think you're seeing that there's ways that it can work in both regards, whether you're a real hardo leader of men or you're a super nerd. And it kind of, you just have to build the team in your vision. And you have to, and then you have to have guys that buy into that vision and move forward with it. And I think that's kind of like, I think Sean McVay is the best coach in football, but he never would have won a Super Bowl without a quarterback like Matthew Stafford.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so it ultimately boils down to the players, and then you just have to have the right coach to kind of lead those guys. And nerds are great, but as you've seen with Kyle Shanahan, who's a super nerd, has not been able to win a title.
So here's my question for you, because when we're identifying nerds versus non-nerd coaches,
definitely.
Bill Belichick, not a super analytical guy, but absolute student of the game.
Different kind of nerd. Like
he's like
a history
savant.
Nerd. He's a history nerd and savant, and like loves the details and loves the rules of the game. Bill Belichick, absolutely a nerd, 100% a nerd.
Interesting. Yep. Interesting. I like this. We might need to break this down further. Maybe like on a Six Rings podcast or something.
Oh, where
we're gonna categorize coaches on
Hardo
the nerd.
Versus nerd.
Yeah, Hardo versus nerd. Where do you fall? Does Vrabel fall?
So Vrabel is really hard. It's like splitting hairs because he leans into the Hardo persona,
but he's
so
absolutely
smart.
Intelligent. He's absolutely intelligent.
He is like, again, a football savant. Like the stories of him in practice where he would basically play every position. He would just play the position of the best player on the other team's defense.
But that's kind of Hardo.
Oh, it's super Hardo. But again, you have to be insanely smart to do that and to like screw with Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback to have ever lived. And so Vrabel's one of those guys that kind of sits on both sides, I guess. Like you look at a guy like Tomlin or a guy like John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh, absolute hardos. All of them are hardos. They're not nerds. They're hardos. It's not even close. Jim Harbaugh wants you to believe he's a nerd because of the khakis and the glasses and all that stuff. Not a nerd. He's a hardo. Whereas guys like McVay, I even think a guy like D'Amico Ryans leans more nerd than he does Hardo.
Well, the clearest nerd of all is Mike McDaniel.
Super nerd. Yep, absolutely.
Super nerd.
Super nerd.
Like
Matt
you
LaFleur,
look at him. Yeah.
Massive nerd.
Interesting.
Mike McDonald, McDonald, the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Nerd. Super nerd.
Yep. Nerd.
Yeah.
Nerd Hardo. Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do the full NFL at a different time. But I have one more question I want to ask you in this segment.
Hit me with it.
Why do people hate Notre Dame so much? Like, I keep seeing all this stuff about, wow, the greatest accomplishment of Marcus Freeman is he made Notre Dame likable. And I knew that some people see Notre Dame as the Duke of NCAA basketball or the Yankees of the MLB and the Cowboys of the NFL, and they find the Notre Dame Rudy stuff obnoxious. But I'm like, have you ever met people from Notre Dame? They are some of the nicest fans that you will ever meet in your entire life. And it's a nice school. And it's a Catholic school. They do a bunch of service. Like, what is your problem? It's not like it's like a bunch of, it's in the middle of nowhere, Indiana. Like, it's not like it's a bunch of like snot-nosed, a-holes running around.
No, I think you're right in that regard. I just think sometimes people get the wrong impression from Notre Dame people, and that they do think they're a little stuck up and they're a little better.
It's not
than
like
you.
They're Harvard.
No. It's definitely not like
Stanford.
No,
people don't hate Stanford.
And Notre Dame people don't need to tell you they went to Notre Dame like all the Ivy League people. Like they can't start a sentence without being like, yeah, I went to Harvard.
They say I went to school in Cambridge.
Okay.
They don't say they went to Harvard. They say, I went to school in Cambridge. And you're like, Harvard?
I went to Yale.
I went to school in New Haven.
I went to Cornell because I'm Andy from The Office. Go red. I don't know exactly why people hate on Notre Dame so much. It's one of those things where I became like a sentient middle schooler, and just a lot of people didn't like Notre Dame. I didn't really understand. I don't really get it.
I love Notre Dame, and I didn't get in.
Yeah.
And I still love it.
I didn't apply.
And I knew I wasn't going to be able to play lacrosse there because I was like good, but I wasn't good that good.
Yep.
They have an outstanding lacrosse program. And I actually used to talk to Lou Marloni about this because he wanted to play baseball there. So we were both like, we both sit there and be like, yeah, well, we weren't good enough for Notre Dame, I guess.
But we can still root for them.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get it. I feel like maybe people just think it's dorky. Like, is it just it's a dorky thing. So to root for Notre Dame is like you're a dummy dork.
Was it too mainstream because of things like Rudy? Did rooting for Notre Dame become so mainstream?
That's what I mean.
That people went the total opposite direction?
It's like Duke. It's like the Yankees. It's like the Cowboys. It's like, why, if you have no connection to Notre Dame, why would you even like them? But I don't know. They also haven't won a championship since I've been born. So it's not like I feel like I'm reaping a ton of benefits.
That's true.
Maybe I know some people. Oh, the one thing that I hear people get super frustrated from a college football perspective is that they never join a conference. And it's like, oh, Notre Dame thinks that they're too good to join a conference. They're just going to be independent. And now I look at the way that college football is now, and I'm like, well, who gives a crap? There's going to be like two conferences in 2 years. Like, there's not going to be any. There's not going to be any conference play. Like, who cares?
617-779-7937. Why do you hate Notre Dame? Do you hate Notre Dame? Do you love Notre Dame? Let us know. We're also going to get back into the New England Patriots, the search for the offensive coordinator, Mike Vrabel's power within the organization, all of it coming up here. It's Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI, but right now David is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending here on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Patriots have requested an interview with Chargers passing game coordinator Marcus Brady and have completed an interview with Bears interim head coach Thomas Brown for their vacant offensive coordinator position. NFL insider Ian Rappaport named Josh McDaniels as the favorite to land the job. The Celtics are back in the win column after defeating the Orlando Magic 121-94 last night. Jason Tatum had 30 points in the win. The Celtics are right back to it tonight as they prepare to face the Atlanta Hawks at 7 p.m. After a much-needed win against the Lightning on Tuesday night, the Bruins are getting ready for a Linus Olmark reunion in a little bit less than an hour as they get ready to play the Ottawa Senators at 3 p.m. The Red Sox reach an agreement with All-Star outfielder Jarren Duran on a $3.85 million contract to avoid arbitration. The deal also includes an $8 million club option for 2026. Boston College men's basketball is preparing to face Cooper Flag and the Duke Blue Devils tonight. Tip-off is at 8 p.m. and you can hear the call on WEEI AM 850. Stay tuned later in the day for Westwood One's coverage of the NFL divisional round right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 4 p.m. with the Houston Texans and Kansas City Chiefs squaring off for a trip to the AFC Championship game next Sunday. I'm David Azer. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of Mego and Shine on WEEI.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. I just wanted to let that song breathe for a minute because that song rips.
You a big Killers guy?
I'm a fan. They're not one of my favorite bands, but I do enjoy them very, very much.
You're not like Evan Drellick?
No.
He's a Killers super fan.
Yeah, I'm not that aggressive, no.
I went to a concert with him, a Killers concert, And I was like, I don't like this band enough to be at this concert with you. to be at this particular concert with you.
I love Mr. Brightside is probably like in my top 10 favorite songs. But when it comes to the Killers, they're not even in my top 10 like favorite bands.
Yeah, they wouldn't be in my top 10, but they're like a good, solid mainstream band.
They got a lot of good hits. They got some good songs.
I like a lot of weird bands, to be honest.
So. Oh, really? Like what?
Yeah. I like a lot of like weird late 80s, early 90s punk rock and stuff like that.
Nice.
So it's not like a ton of, I guess I'm too cool for some of this mainstream stuff.
I get
not
that.
Really.
I listen to a lot of early 2000s, mid 2000s, like emo pop punk. So,
are we talking like Brand New, Taking Back Sunday?
Yeah.
Ilk?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Tell me about, so in the battle between Brand New and Taking Back Sunday, whose side are you on?
Taking Back Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a big Taking Back Sunday guy.
Brand New is better, though.
I disagree.
Taking Back Sunday is a little more hardcore, but Brand New is, I think, has the better catalog overall.
Yeah, I even lean more like pop punky at times too. Like I was a big like I love A Day to Remember. They're more almost even more in that like metalcore. But
okay.
Not quite.
Don't know them.
Yep, they're great. Tremendous. I introed with the song, since you weren't here for the start of Thursday's program, I introed with my favorite
song. Come on!
I introed with my favorite song by them that night. But no, like, I even like All Time Low.
I know that.
Mayday Parade. Get, like, really emo with it. Stuff like that. Like, I was in that kind of, the main in that kind of genre.
So, my problem is, like, I kind of stopped getting interested in new bands for the most part after I turned, I don't know, like 28. I was
really?
Like, I'm done discovering new bands. I'll listen to new music, but like, I'm just going to go back to the bands I love and these are going to be my bands. But my husband is really into some of the kind of like alt country Americana rock.
Yes.
And so now I'm like deep in Sturgill Simpson.
Okay.
I'm like deep in that whole world. Turnpike Troubadours.
Nice.
Like, so I'm all over that. And that's kind of dominating all my playlists right now, and I kind of feel like a fraud. So sometimes I got to turn back to some Descendants. I got to turn back to some like early punk stuff because I'm like, I'm losing my edge over here listening to Sturgill Simpson sing about Jupiter fairies.
No, it's okay. You're allowed to like the bands you've always loved. So my fiance is like a huge hair metal kind of fan. Like her favorite
band. That's awesome.
Her favorite band of all time is Def Leppard. Just
oh my
reference.
God.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Of all time. But like of recent note, she, thanks in large part because of how often I listen to him, now also really loves Noah Kahan. And so so you can listen to Noah Kahan all the time and enjoy it. And then and when you really need it, you go back and you just jam out to Def Leppard or whatever your favorite band is. I think that's totally okay.
I also have this issue because I did like, this like late 80s, early 90s. Punk music so much in like my formative years that I don't like when things are too pretty.
Okay.
So like Noah Kahan, I like okay. Like
it's
fine.
His music is messy. It's good.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it sounds pretty. Like it
really?
Sounds, it sounds a little too like clean.
Oh, so you gotta listen to the words. Like that's when you'll identify the messiness.
Okay. Why don't you mansplain listening
no, I'm
to
not,
lyrics
okay.
a little bit more?
I'm not trying to mansplain. I'm just saying like as a Noah Kahan super fan, like it's just like the words are the messy part of his music. I understand what you mean by the pretty, like, Mego, you may need to restart your access here. You're cutting in and out a little bit. Internet might be going out. It's okay. She'll be back eventually. I'm just like I don't know. I like Noah Kahan in that regard. One of the other guys I started listening to, Sam Fender, very good. Appeared on a Noah Kahan song, and that's one of the reasons why I think I found him in the first place. But yeah, I think it's a great idea. You learn, you find some new music, you kind of go, down a Spotify rabbit hole or whatever music app you use, and you find some new stuff. But then you also dial it back to all the stuff you always know, you've always loved. And you keep going with that. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in today on the phone line. That's the same number for the text line as well. We working, David, we working on getting Mego back over there? All right, cool. So she will be back here momentarily. But while we try to get Mego back, Don wants to explain why everyone hates Notre Dame. What's up, Don?
Okay, it's got nothing to do with the school, the football team, or any alumni. What it is there are so many people that act like they're part of the Notre Dame family that never even drove there. You know, it's like the fans that they have no ties to Notre Dame, but they're just so obnoxious about being Notre Dame fans.
Got it. Okay, so it's
I should know because one of my best friends growing up, he's still like that today.
Is that like an Irish thing, or is it just like we have no relationship to Notre Dame whatsoever, but we want to be hard-o fans about them?
I coincidentally, he's Irish.
All right, Don, thanks for the call. Mego, I believe you're back now.
Yes.
Is that correct? All right, perfect.
You know what? I was just so offended by you trying to talk to me about lyrics and understanding them that I had to jump off for a minute.
I wasn't trying to, like, mansplain lyrics to you.
I'm kidding.
It's just Noah Kahan being one of my favorites. I wanted to explain the messiness. That's all, you know. Don and Drake it. To answer your question from earlier, Mego, believes that the reason why people hate Notre Dame is because of all the people who had zero relationship to Notre Dame being super hard-o fans about them.
But shouldn't that kind of, like, inspire you? Like, isn't that what fandom is about? I guess, again, it's like when I meet somebody because I hate the Cowboys because I'm a Washington fan, and so it's our natural rivalry. When I find somebody who grew up a Cowboys fan outside of Dallas, I go, I can understand why you in Texas love the Cowboys.
Yeah, they were one of the most popular teams in the world.
Okay, but if you're growing up in New York, especially, or Philly, you got your own crap-ass team.
True.
Like, you don't get to root for the Cowboys in the 90s. Come on. So I guess maybe I understand that
Okay, so, like, basically all those people are, like, bandwagon fans. They jumped on and they just held on for dear life, whereas Notre Dame never won a thing. And so they're not bandwagon fans, they're just fans of the program.
Yeah, I guess you could say maybe. And another thing that I could imagine is that Notre Dame has the NBC connection.
Yeah,
so
being independent.
Every Notre Dame game is treated like this huge marquee event, and other people of other fans of other teams probably don't feel like they get the same treatment. So maybe it's just a special treatment thing.
Yeah, one text said, I think people around here hate Notre Dame because they used to come in and just beat down on Boston College every single year all the time, and people hated that.
Isn't there a group of people around here who also hate Boston College, though, and not just BU students who are hockey fans? Like,
yeah, true.
I mean, I guess you could find haters for any fan base, but it feels like Notre Dame. I kept seeing that comment, biggest accomplishment is Marcus Freeman getting Notre Dame to be likable. I'm like, come on, guys. They don't even win. They just get there and then they get stomped.
Yeah, you're probably right. Marcus Freeman's just, I think he's likable on his own. Like, it's not even like, I don't think he made Notre Dame likable. I don't know. I think the football team's likable. Like, I think the quarterback, Riley Leonard is his name, right? I think he's likable in the way that he plays the game of football.
A Duke kid.
Yeah.
He came from Duke. Another unlikable.
But that's the thing, too. Like, there's likable people from unlikable schools. Jason Tatum, likable kid who played at Duke, right? Like, I think that happens all the time.
And then you get your Kyrie Irvings.
Bingo. Exactly.
Who's like Mr. Duke incarnate. Do you want to get back to the Patriots, though?
Yeah,
do you want to get into Robin Glazer?
Yeah, let's get back into the Patriots. So Robin Glazer, who was with the New England Patriots for many, many years, she was the executive vice president of football business for the Patriots, plans to resign and step down. Basically, what Reese had said in his report was that her responsibilities were as a senior advisor to former coach Gerard Mayo. She also handled oversight and management of all the football department budgets, expenditures, capital expenses, as well as business and technology agreements. And so my thought was that, like, this is a big move for Mike Vrabel because it is a clear establishment of power. He is clearly, like, peeing on his territory. Like, this is my team now. I am in charge. I am running things. I determine the budget. I determine all of these expenditures and everything. All the money we use on the roster, I am in charge. And I think that's good news for the New England Patriots going forward. Mego, do you agree?
I agree with your assessment completely. This looks to me like, hey, Robin Glazer has been with the New England Patriots for 18 years. So how do you look at all of a sudden maybe she just decides she wants to tap out I don't think it's a coincidence that it's when Mike Vrabel comes in here, and it looks like the Patriots are turning back towards a model of Mike Vrabel's not going to be the GM, but he is the head coach, and he is going to have a heavy hand in everything operationally. I do find one of the more fascinating parts of this report, and I do think like Barstool Sports had it first, and then Mike Reese comes out with this last night at 5 and has the hardcore information in here. That description that you read, Shime, that's the most that I've ever heard about exactly what Robin Glazer had her hands in.
Agreed.
Last season. There was so much speculation last season, starting with last offseason when she was in the interviews with potential offensive coordinators, and you had to go through 12 of them to secure one, about what is she doing? She's this lawyer. She handles contracts. What is her job here or there? To have this information from an extremely reputable reporter in ESPN's Mike Reese, that she handled oversight and management of all football department budgets, expenditures, and capital expenses. Money. That is money talk right there. That is a huge freaking deal. Now that person's going to be out mid-February. I think that shows that there's going to be a real different kind of structure with Vrabel in place here.
Yeah, I think for years the New England Patriots have had a very different approach to spending money, whether it's on players on their own teams, in free agency, via trades, and I think that is going to change. I think you're going to see it become much more similar to the rest of the NFL in the ways in which they utilize their money now with Glazer out. She was basically the budget lady. She came in and said, you can buy that, you can't buy that. No, we need to cut that expense out and cut his ass. We don't need him. We're going to save $1 million here or there or however. And now with Vrabel being in control, he's like, no. We're going to do this like a normal football team. We are going to spend money when we need to spend money and where we want to spend money. And then we are going to save money in other ways and find different avenues to do that. And I think that's important because I think Mike Vrabel establishing dominance and establishing control is a good thing for the overall future of the organization, especially when it comes to acquiring personnel, finding the right personnel, whether it be in the staff or on the field. And ultimately, this gives me a bit of a vote of confidence in the fact of all the things I was questioning Thursday night. We were talking about, I'm like, oh boy, Elliott Wolff's still here. What is he still doing here? If he has any say in what goes on, I'm going to lose it. But instead, it seems as though Mike Vrabel is the one calling the shots.
I agree with you. I hope that that's the case. I hope this isn't just scapegoating someone who's not Elliott Wolff, because it's easier to dissolve whatever contract that she has than to dissolve Elliott Wolff's contract. And I have no idea what that is, but it would seem that he signed his in the spring, so he's still under contract right now. Can I ask you about something, though? Because I think overriding this entire thing is the question of the stability of the franchise. And you watch the Crafts ownership, control of the team swing from hard-ass vibes, Bill has all the control, over to player-friendly, collaborative environment, Gerard Mayo, something that was a complete overcorrection. Mm-hmm. And now it seems that it's swinging at least back towards somewhat what it was. And I think that's the right thing. But I think when you see an organization flip-flop so much between two extremes, I do think it's worth watching, and I think it's cause for concern.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but I feel like this is the direction they should have gone in the first place, right?
They,
like,
should have never wavered so strongly from.
No, they should have. I mean, Mike Vrabel being available the year you're going to move on from Bill Belichick was like a dream come true. It was the perfect opportunity, and yet you were insistent on putting Gerard Mayo in here. And so I felt like this was just a correction of a mistake you made 365 days ago. And it was you overreacted to Bill Belichick's personality and approach to things because they wanted their football team back. And when they realized they weren't capable of totally managing and establishing a winning program on their own, they're like, oh crap, we just need to do what won us a lot of things in the first place, which is allow a guy to come in and be in charge and be in control and shop for his own groceries in order to make his meal. And I think that's what they did with the hiring of Mike Vrabel, is they saw the at least brief error in their ways for the moment, and they brought in a guy who knows what he's doing, a guy much more like Bill Belichick than, you know, a friend of players playing cards in the back of the plane.
Are you a big, like, cap tracker guy? Cap, cash spending, all that?
No, because I think it's funny money, and you can manipulate the cap in whatever way you want.
I do want to read this DM that I got.
Oh,
this
okay.
This is just a listener who was listening to us earlier, and I think that this is a really interesting perspective. This listener says, talks about the comments that Kraft made almost 2 weeks ago now when he said that he asks the front office to reconcile the cap every 3 years.
Yep.
Basically balance out the sheet
balance
every
checkbook.
3 years.
Yep.
Yeah. He says, do you realize when he said that he was artfully saying the Patriots were a cash to cap team? The CBA evaluates accounting measures in 3-year chunks and requires that a team's books reflect meeting the salary cap floor and ceiling, but that has nothing to do with guaranteed money in large sums, which is what can be deferred on teams' caps.
Correct.
So do you think that that makes the idea of the Crafts being generous in some seasons and not in others, does that come off as disingenuous to you?
A little bit, I guess. They're not like other teams in that, you know, even in a league with a hard cap, right? The Bruins spend to the cap every year. Like, they absolutely spend right to the tip of the cap every year, whereas the New England Patriots don't do that. They're too worried about, like you said, they're just like want to keep a relative same budget, balance it over 3 years. Yeah, you might spend a lot in 2021, but then 2022 and 2023, we're not spending anything. And that's kind of a dumb way to do it. You can't do it like that. And so I'm hoping that by removing Robin Glazer from the equation and Mike Vrabel being more in charge, that it'll be more of a balanced approach, right? You don't need to have those spike years. Instead, you spend a little more each season and kind of have it relatively be consistent, because that's how it should be. I think for the large part of Bill Belichick's tenure as the head coach, that's what it was. There weren't general spike years in which he paid a lot of money. Even those years where he would go out and get more talent, they were at relatively inexpensive prices. The acquisition of Randy Moss, Wes Welker, even going out and getting Darrell Revis for a year. Like, they never broke the acquisition of Stephon Gilmore in free agency. They never broke the bank in those regards.
No, they shop like I shop. Like, if I need something designer, I'm going to the TJ Maxx in Newton, because they got a crazy designer collection, and Jones's wife and I both shop there a ton. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? This Randy Moss looks like it's $700, but I got it for $120.
Yeah, and they try and maximize those cheaper assets, and it allowed Bill to spend more money filling in the cracks of the rest of the organization, where, like, he would get a lot more of those guys in the margins, your Kyle Van Noy's, your Rob Ninkovich's, your, like, guys of that ilk, that he could then kind of just, like, putty up the walls and make sure everything was good to go so that Tom Brady could trot out and win them football games. And so in a post-Belichick and Brady era, Vrabel has to find a way to not have those peak years and continuously and consistently fill in all the cracks with the same kind of money amount each year, and so that it doesn't look like what 21, 22, 23 looked like.
We'll see what they do.
We sure will. 617-779-7937 if you want to get in here. Final segment of Mego and Shime coming up here on Boston Sports Original.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego sets play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, The sports media podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
WEEI.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Yeah, that's more my speed right there. 617-779-7937. Shime and Mego here. Just ahead of the NFL divisional round of the playoffs, which you can listen to right here on WEEI. Boomer and Valenti coming up next with a bit of a national program, I believe, heading into those games, Mego. But one of the big things going on for me, Mego, that I have to ask you about, are you as upset as I am about the TikTok ban?
I am not a TikToker.
No?
I never got on TikTok. I just wait for TikToks to appear on Instagram. And that's how I find them. I never got in. I don't know. I honestly never even downloaded it. So it was never a thing for me. But I do feel bad for all the people who are big creators on it and like depend on it for revenue streams.
That's one of the crazier things.
You knew it was going to happen for almost a year now. So if it certainly happens and it isn't saved after, I don't know, the 20th, after you have a new president coming in and maybe looking at that differently, but it seems like it's donezo.
Yeah, it's upsetting. I love TikTok. I spend a lot of time, you know, watching some videos. It's fun. I get a lot of laughs out of it. I see a lot of clips that I otherwise wouldn't see, and it's upsetting that it's going to be going away. I really enjoyed it, and
Like, contribute to it? Do you make stuff?
I mean, I've made like a handful of TikToks, but nothing crazy. I've made a couple. Like, I made one the day Drake May became the starter. But like, you know, I just make them here and there, nothing crazy. I more so just enjoy scrolling. I love it. I love the content that's on there. I think it's fantastic.
And I guess
it's just silly that they're banning it. It's so dumb.
I assume TikTok is a lot of like staged joke videos and
sometimes
people doing like get ready with me videos.
No, and there's way more than that.
Neither of those really appeal to me.
No, there's food recipes. There's, you know, clips of different creators and funny stuff. There's funny stuff. There's educational content. There's all kinds of stuff on there. And it's a bummer that it's going to be
gone.
Yeah,
there was.
You're right. And I feel bad for all those who made money off of TikTok. But that'll do it for Shime and Mego. Mego, thank you so much. I will talk to you on Monday, 2 o'clock.
Then.
I'll see you right here in studio. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. It has been Shime and Mego on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Keep it locked right here for all divisional football coverage of the NFL playoffs coming up on WEEI.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.